Hello, I'm your host Andrew Figgins, and welcome back to Proceed to Checkout. For part 4 in our series on Beer Honk, we're just over the halfway point in our story. If you haven't yet tuned in to parts 1 through 3, I highly suggest you go back and listen before proceeding. To date, I've guided us through Beer Honk's evolution as a site and a brand. Now let's talk more deeply about the business and the ways it has ebbed and flowed since 2012. I'll get into part 4 after this message from our partner. Adobe has partnered with Wayflyer to provide B2C e-commerce businesses with easy, fast funding to accelerate their growth. Wayflyer tailors their funding solution for each business to fit their unique needs, while also offering marketing and inventory insights to optimize spend. Also, approved businesses can receive between $10,000 and $20 million in flexible funding within 1 to 3 days. Whether your business needs some minor tuck pointing work done on an exterior wall, or your big idea to reshape education by removing dark sarcasm from every classroom has hit a snag, check out wayflyer.com/adobe to join Adobe Commerce and Magento open source merchants that are already using Wayflyer today. Anyway, since we're talking about evolution, expansion, etc., I thought it'd be fun to first take it back to my conversation with co-founder and CEO Mark Roberts as a way of level setting the early days of Beer Honk. Here's Mark talking through those days, and in particular reminiscing on their first major beverage orders, and you'll notice that he mentions a certain email.
I think it's fair to say that we didn't plan or prepare particularly well for what was about to happen. So we didn't realize actually that the email would be sent to the entire base of 2.2 million. We thought they would do a small test run and we'd just check that the technology was working and that the order form that was using a voucher code, which was actually quite complicated to integrate into our Magento site. We wanted to sort of test that first, but actually they sent it to the entire universe. And I remember walking home with Chris. We were walking because, frankly, I'd sold my car to fund the business. And we were going back and we still had orders come through as emails on our mobile phone. And all of a sudden, our phones started pinging with an order, and it was an East Coast order. And we're like, oh, they must have sent a test email. And then the phone kept pinging and kept pinging. And I remember there was a point on the walk where it went from, this is brilliant, this is amazing, to, oh, crumbs. And we stopped and we actually turned back and went into a big realization that, you know, we didn't really have the beer, the packaging, or the people to pack these orders. And so we spent the weekend scrambling and, you know, looking for beer from our breweries and looking for sort of boxes and looking for people to sort of help pack. And through many late nights and favors called in, we were able to sort of get those orders fulfilled. And that turned into people who enjoyed that experience and then came back onto our website to order directly from us, which then sort of showed us that actually there was a big market in Christmas gifts for people who were difficult to buy for. Actually, a box of beer was the perfect Christmas gift. That was nowhere near our business plan. You know, we really didn't even anticipate that being a thing at all. And of course, it's a really big thing for our business.
Well, they've certainly come a long way since then, especially given all we've heard so far about Black Friday and holiday preparations nowadays at the company. But in addition to those early days, I find it's important to understand hiring and Beer Honk's evolving values as a company in order to best understand how the business itself has evolved. Here's Mark again with some insight on how building the team has changed over time.
I spend a lot of time thinking about the team and how the team is working together, and hiring into the business is super important. And our values play a huge role in trying to identify the character of person that, you know, potentially would fit. And to do that, especially with being a small business, I really wanted to get actively involved in the hiring process, and I would personally meet candidates for any role, you know, right up until I think we got to, you know, maybe 100 people and beyond and ongoing. And often I'd try to do that in a very non-interview situation, being in the beer world, sometimes just going down the pub, meeting someone for a drink and just talking and, you know, allowing them to share what really, you know, motivates them and the things that they've been up to, and me to share the vision of the company and the things that sort of motivate us, so that we can both explore whether there is a fit. And I think a big part of my job is to make sure that culture and that people dimension, you know, continues to live and breathe. I think it was really brought into focus when we were a very young business and definitely made a hiring mistake. And I think, you know, very, very, very early on, we hired someone to actually help interact with our customers and sort of talk to them about potential offers. And I remember, you know, Chris and I sitting in the room, because there only was one room, genuinely cringing with how they were talking about beer and how they were, you know, talking to some of our customers. And so that person didn't really make it back to day three. But we realized early on that, you know, that we give a shit and we always make it better and we're down to earth. Those are the things that really matter to us. And sometimes it's very, very easy to see them when you've actually made a mistake. And it's easy to see some of the things that you're not about rather than the things that you are. So, you know, looking at a mistake in a positive way, that certainly helped us to chisel out some of the values and to work out the type of business that we wanted to build.
All right, so has that type of business co-founders Mark and Chris wanted to build evolved? Let's bring back content and community lead Dan Marsham to share some insight on BeerHawk's evolution from business to consumer to a more omni-channel approach. He even teases a bit about the customer loyalty program, which we'll dive into more in part five.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it was always about getting beer into people's houses. And initially, that was always done on a business-to-consumer basis. It was a case of getting the beer into our warehouse, repackaging it in various mixed cases into solo bottles that people could order, and then shipping that out to our consumers. Since I've joined, there's been a lot of changes and very much so like an omni-channel view to how we work as a business. We have a really strong business-to-business platform now, where we're selling to Amazon and supermarkets over here in the UK as well. It's grown massively. And to see that develop alongside the growth of the business, just on the business to consumer level, but also then taking advantage of the fact that, you know, we are a big enough business now to be selling into these larger supermarkets and that business to business side as well, it's been really exciting. And from another omnichannel perspective as well, we do also lend our name to a couple of bars in the UK, which is really good. And looking at how we do integrated loyalty systems with those bars, which I was a part of early on in the conversations, we have bars over in Leeds and London, the capital. So it's really exciting. The marketing mix has grown massively, even since I've joined.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Dan. And as is clear, the last few years at BeerHawk have seen massive growth and alterations in their approach to the business. Before we talk bars, let's hear a little bit more about how the team approaches the website for B2B, or business to business, from Senior Product Manager Matthew Freegard, including some insight on what sort of traffic the site sees.
Sure, it was definitely an MVP, so I'll caveat the 4 to 6 weeks with an MVP. And I'd probably say we didn't necessarily look into the audience enough, but if you're trying to spin up a website to get something out into the market and test it early, then I think there's always part of that that you can't necessarily adhere to exactly what your audience would need. So that definitely came as later iterations as we went through the process. Defining the audience was definitely picking up the experience of a couple of key members in our team. So we only had about 4 or 5 people dedicated to the B2B offering. So we definitely leveraged the couple of people that were on there that had very solid B2B experience. I actually had some B2B experience with my previous role before joining BeerHawk. So that was really useful. So I lived and breathed a large B2B company for 18 months before that. So that helped. And that was an e-commerce based role as well. So having that understanding of, how order management, how hierarchies could be used in different companies, all that kind of stuff, how people would want to pay, that they want to pay on credit, that kind of thing. So we just discussed all of those kind of things, really, like how the fundamentals would work when we are dealing with pubs, restaurant owners, that kind of thing, like purchasing managers that don't necessarily have the ability to set the commercial agreements, but do have the ability to purchase, all of that kind of stuff, really. So it was an interesting process. But then also at the end of the day, I think the craft beer industry allows to understand that these people are, I suppose, B2B. I think that B2B, you should just think of it as a good website to use, really. There's some functionality difference, but the way that people use a website nowadays is there's no difference because it's so ingrained in what people do. So the way that I thought about it was very similar to the way I approach work now. It's just making sure that the website's just as easy to use as possible, really. So just making sure that you empathize with anybody, let alone if they're B2B or B2C, it doesn't really matter. Luckily enough, we already had the Carson checkout built for the BeerHawk brand as a whole. And we utilized that. So that was already like the big fundamentals of that were already covered from both or for all devices, really. I think that we took a bit more of a desktop approach, again, because of Magento and the way that it works is already configured to be responsive and work across different devices. So we didn't have to worry too much. But yeah, I think we thought that it was more of a desktop kind of experience. And the stats did say that, although we didn't have loads and loads of visitors on the website, because you don't need that many accounts to start the business when you're talking about bigger purchases. You're not talking £100 purchases, you're talking £1,000, £2,000 purchases instead. So we definitely saw more desktop people on.
All right, now it's time to transition into the addition of in-person for this once e-commerce only or online only company. Here's Mark with input on how the decision to add bars to the portfolio came about. For any How I Met Your Mother fans out there, when I was chatting with Mark about this, I couldn't help but think about Barney and Ted's Puzzles Bar from the show. Why is it called Puzzles? That's the puzzle! Anyway, here's Mark.
I don't know. Certainly for myself and for Chris, we just always wanted to have a bar. And it felt like, you know, that's a thing that Deerhawk could do well. Because, you know, yes, there are some great craft beer bars in the UK, but I really believe that, you know, by hunting out the world's best beers and by curating them, you know, Deerhawk have a right to create an environment. Now, actually, the reason why we also wanted to do it was to just learn more from customers. It's super hard to convey passion and emotion about a beer or any products, I think, online only. Via a website. You know, you put out these beers, but they become photos of bottles or cans, and they're on a white background, and it can come across and feel very transactional. And actually, that's not the type of relationship that we wanted with customers. It's also really hard to keep learning about the trends in the market and, you know, what our customers are moving on to drink, what they think about different beers. So having bars as a way of actually interacting with customers and learning about our range and the market and letting them, I hope, get more of an emotive connection to the Beerhawk brand than what they could via a website was very much part of. And I think also for us to try to learn a bit more about, you know, this funny world omnichannel and how, you know, if someone, you know, associates themselves with the Beerhawk brand and they're used to buying online, but they walk into a bar, you know, wouldn't it be great, you know, with their permission for the barman to be able, or bar ladies to be able to say, you know, look, I see you like this type of beer. Well, I've just come across this beer and it's kind of the same, but it's just brilliant. Why don't you just try it? And trying to help our customers discover their next favorite beer, you know, that became the mission for what we wanted to do. Kind of felt easier in that face-to-face environment. And I really believe the bars allowed us to bring something back onto our website channels as well that just kept that connection.
I know I've said this already, but seriously wish I was in the UK right now so I could pop by a Beerhawk pub and run into this team. Here's head of marketing, Rob Flanagan, expanding on what Mark just shared. Rob also touches on the tech challenges that the bars raised, as well as some of the data learnings the team gleaned from customer interactions in-store. Again, this is hinting at the loyalty program we'll expand on in the next part, part 5.
So selling beer online is a great experience because you get to deliver this and you can see people enjoying the beers when they post them on social media, in their gardens, when they're drinking with friends, everything like that. In the UK, we have another massive opportunity to drink beer, and that's in pubs and comfy little bars. And it's such a huge part of our culture. And it's also a massive part of Beerhawk's culture. Like, we would finish work and then we would go to the tap in Harrogate, or, you know, we'd go to a brewery bar. And all the while, when you're selling beer and you're involved in this beer culture, you can't just like sit in these bars and, you know, be working purely in terms of direct to consumer and selling alcohol for people to drink in their homes. So it was a long time in the making, our transition into physical bricks and mortar. There was a lot of work that went in behind the scenes, like kind of planning it out. We talked about it for years. We originally went with a bar in London, even though we were based at the time in Leeds. I think it was the right decision. London's a very different kind of atmosphere to Leeds. It's very fast paced. We managed to gather an awful lot of data. We came at it from very much an e-commerce perspective, and we were marketing this online. We were using all of our our email prowess, our organic social to push this as much as possible. For me personally, it's very selfish. My connection with the bars grew considerably when we opened our Leeds bar, and it was a bar that I could go to regularly after work. And we've definitely got our fair share of use out of that Leeds bar, definitely. It's a great place. It's gave us an opportunity to really connect the digital with the physical. And like, we actually integrated a loyalty platform that would work both in the bars and also on the website. So doing that has really helped us cross the void and kind of reach out. So it was a great atmosphere for trying new things. So the way that we spun loyalty out was very different. We were trying to find a way that was both digital, but also obviously in a physical space. It really pushed us to think differently about things. It was probably at the time, I would be honest, a step too far. We pushed ourselves to develop this system, and you know, we went into this thinking, oh wow, yeah, it's going to be relatively easy. We have a loyalty system already. We can just expand this into a physical space. You actually end up with a completely different kind of customer. There's lots of different usage mechanics there. And the data that we were generating was so different to what we were seeing from an e-commerce side of things. And all the while, customers see this as one experience. Like, they don't differentiate between the BeerHawk bar and the BeerHawk website. It was a very challenging atmosphere, but it was a great place to test stuff. And it really did challenge a lot of our assumptions about BeerHawk as a brand just by spinning this up and, yeah, going to market with it.
I'm going to take things on a bit of a tangent now, so we can bring back tech lead Chris to walk through the customer journey from site to bar. Here he is.
I would say it is a great success because I believe we still got all the bars now after pandemic open. The whole customer journey, when it actually starts on the website, they try all these beers, they explore the craft world with the beers, and then walk into the bar. You're walking on the street and you see the bar where it's your beer supplier. You can walk in and every single beer is in the bottle fridge. You can have bottle, can, or it's a massive wall of draft. So you can try. Previously, before the pandemic, we had a massive wall of beers inside the shopping mall as well. But because of the pandemic, I believe it was taken down. So it was a great experience when you visit London and you are from the different part of the country, city center London, you walk in another BeerHawk bar, you follow the brand and you drink in. So your user experience starts on the website and actually can finish in the physical being in the bar, which that you can actually drink your favorite beers.
As Chris alluded, the pandemic, from which we're all still experiencing business changes, certainly led to adjustments for BeerHawk and its bars, as well as for its product offerings. To expand on some of the effects of the pandemic for BeerHawk, including ways the company gave back, here are Rob and Dan.
With lockdown in the UK, it became an incredibly difficult time for physical spaces like bars and pubs to sell alcohol. And it was exactly the same for our BeerHawk bars. We still had to close those down. We tried to roll with the punches and do direct to consumer delivery from the bars as well. So with using Deliveroo and platforms like that, we quickly just tried to start selling through those and act as a bit of a community hub. For our Leeds bar, we partnered with a food company as well, so they could use our kitchen and they could do deliveries out of it as well, which was a great way to reach more people. The sad truth of it all, though, is that it became very difficult to sustain during lockdown. And one of the things that I love about BeerHawk is that when we saw this happen and the first lockdown in the UK, before it was announced that there would be a system that could support people who were furloughed, who couldn't work, we brought in a donation. So every single order that was placed on our website, £1 of that would go towards a charity that was designed to help hospitality workers who were struggling for money because of the lockdown. So it was a really nice touch. And I think it's something we would have done anyway, but having a physical brick and mortar space meant that we really did see exactly how this lockdown had impacted that business. And yeah, while the online side of the business could still sell, and it was, kind of a very busy time there as those pubs closed, we were also reeling from that closure of our own bar, literally just down the road from our warehouse. So it was a sad time for us, but I'm glad that we could do that and help out.
Overall, the pandemic has been, obviously horrible from a personal standpoint, But it actually helped us to streamline a lot of processes here at Bearhawk as well. We kind of redeveloped the entire product offering that we did at Bearhawk. When I started, we were very proud of the fact that we had over 800 different SKUs on the website. And then later on, it became over 900 different SKUs on the website. And then that reached that golden number of over 1,000 beers available through Bearhawk. And that is a massive claim. And it was true. It was 100% true. I can't say I've tried all 1,000. I wish I had, but it was true. And it got to the point where, obviously, with the pandemic, and how we had to change our operation system, obviously with social distancing and just maintaining how we looked after our employees, we had to change everything. So instantly we reached out to the community and just said, look, this over 1,000 beers just it's not going to work. What we're going to do is develop a product set and build a way that you can safely, quickly and efficiently order your beer, get it delivered to your house. Because the only thing open now, certain supermarkets and the odd shop here and there, we want to develop something that will help you in your new life in the pandemic. And it was great. We got some fantastic feedback and help to what we could do to build out these new products and these new services that we're going to be offering the customers. And again, if we had a bad idea, we got told we had a bad idea. And that was really, really good.
So many of us can relate to making exceedingly difficult decisions over the last year plus. I asked B2C e-commerce manager Claire to offer some deeper insight on the decision to scale back product offerings in 2020, as well as how that led to changes in managing orders and stock.
A lot of the team had joined Bearhawk because they are passionate craft beer drinkers. And the largest part of the exciting, interesting craft beers were in that individual bottle shop section. So the decision to take to sort of remove that wasn't an easy one, because that was a lot of people felt really strongly that the bottle shop was really good. It was really good for the brand. It showed, you know, all the exciting breweries that are out there, and that was where we could showcase them. There was definitely some pushback in the team around, should we do this? Do we want to do this? I was definitely on the fence. I wasn't like, yes, we should get rid of it immediately. It was a tough decision. So we made the choice and we did it. And, you know, some people probably weren't happy. But then maybe 3 or 4 months into the pandemic, it was clear that actually this was the right decision for us. This was a good move. And yeah, I think there was definitely that feeling of actually like we've cleared out so much stock that we were just holding, and we're pushing through much better, got a greater control of our catalog now because it's smaller, and you know, we can really focus. And it was at that point at which you were like, yeah, that was the right call. That was definitely the right choice. And there might be time in the future that we bring that individual bottle shop back. But you know, at the minute we're really happy with the choice that we made. And I think everyone feels the same, I hope. It actually made the merchandising side a lot easier, because when you have a catalogue of 800 individual products, it's actually really hard to show what you want at the time that you want to show it. It's a lot of manual management to make sure that sort of where you want things to show. So, oh, this week we're promoting this product, and then you've got to find it in this massive catalogue. On one side, it's got easier. On the other hand, yes, because we're doing mixed packs and we're solely focused on those, sort of managing the sort of range of things within those packs has become more important, and sort of more of our everyday processes where we're having to make sure, you know, the range of beers in that product are exactly what's on the website. So that's definitely something that's, yeah, on one side got easier, on one side got harder. Probably an even change, really.
And finally, as a way to wrap this section on the business of Bearhawk, here's Mark again to speak of the company's acquisition by ZX Ventures in 2016 and how they've continued to maintain their culture throughout this time of scaling the business.
We'd got to the point where we had a team maybe of about 15 people, and the business could operate itself without Chris and I being in the building. So, you know, probably 4 years in, we'd been able to have the odd holiday, you know, a contactable holiday, and never, you know, at the same time, but the business could kind of take care of itself. And And then all of a sudden we had an opportunity to start a conversation that was entirely out of the blue. And that conversation turned into an investment and an acquisition of Beerhawk. But that was only after some long conversations about how it would work and you know, the roles and responsibilities. And one of the key things was like, how can Beerhawk continue being Beerhawk? This is the whole reason Chris and I set up the business. It's actually the whole reason why a larger company, you know, wanted to invest in the business. And the worst thing possible would be to seek to change, you know, too much, or to have, you know, the founders step too far away. So we were very keen to be involved and be, you know, not just involved, but responsible and accountable for things and continue to run the business whilst our team grew and our team scaled. And I think that's actually worked really, really well. And to me, it feels like the, you know, the culture of the business, despite scaling, has maintained, which is, you know, the most important thing to me. And to see some of the team who were there in the early days still there, and not just there, but thriving in bigger roles. And, you know, hopefully their careers have really accelerated as a result, and they've just had a great time as well. That's the thing that I'm really proud of.
Well, that is truly inspiring. Thank you, Mark. And this technically concludes part four, but because we're all here to hear about how the business comes together around the website, here's Andy, the Beerhawk customer services lead, to share some insight on how his team uses the site when helping customers. Consider this a sneak preview of sorts for part five.
When I first started, it was very much you answer some emails and you have a phone line. That's as simple as it was. It was one phone number that ran Robin to three people and one email inbox powered by provider that we just answered all our customers with. But now we've really changed the focus on that. So the phone calls are still as important to us, but we're looking to shift as much of our technology towards instant chat through Messenger while customers are still on site. And we have more agents than I've ever had who are available during the times. We're mostly open just during office hours for now, but we are looking to expand that. And what we look for in terms of the technology is being able to use like keyword searching and things that we would call tagging of specific issues together and being able to report that out. So in terms of the tech, the biggest thing for me was the data functionality and the ability that we've now got to present to the rest of the business where we can make improvements. That's been huge. We did not have that when I started.
I hope you are intrigued for the next episode of Proceed to Checkout. In that episode, which is part five, we'll continue on focusing on the customer community and how they've shaped the business over the years. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you're listening to help others find us. For more information on the Magento Association and additional merchant case studies, check out the links in our show notes. Here's Matthew to lead us out on a story about expanding his craft beer knowledge.
Probably means I've drank too many beers to properly remember, which is a bad thing. But I know where I transitioned from lager into ales. So that was definitely at university. And sadly, from a price point of view, I just tried a few ales because of some schemes that I think that my university tried to sell the ales that weren't selling. So I was like, oh, okay, I quite like this. I quite like the slightly flatter beer. So then always looked out for ales. I've got a passion for food and drink anyway. So I think it was just exploring that, seeing what there is around me and in the pubs and trying different things. And then just started to pick up what my tastes were, what I liked. So you mentioned hoppy beers. Yeah, that's a big tick for me. And it just went from there, really. And I just became passionate about beer through discovery, I think, just trying different things and what you can do with it. So actually, I like to travel to the US and try US beers. I was very grateful for when we did set up the B2B website because we had fresh American beers in a warehouse refrigerated to keep the hops even better. So yeah, it was kind of living that, like the Americans do, for storing beers and having fresh beers. It was great. And that drove me even further into hoppy beers. I just kept on going from there, really.